And we're holding on to Samach Zion Amr Aleph, third line. And we're in the middle of discussing the issues of Shinui Maisa and Shinui Hashem and other such things, what are the details when those cause that now the Ganav acquires the object itself and now he only has to repay the value of it. We talked about, for example, a person stole a korban from somebody else, we talked about actually there's yiyush, is yiyush by itself enough to be koina? What about, for example, we talked about a case where he stole a piece of leather and cut around the edges of it to make it into an itzba, as we talked about yesterday, a picnic blanket or a saddle cover, according to the different opinions. The last thing we talked about was, take, for example, a person steals a beam and builds it into a house. Chakonas Chachamim, he doesn't have to tear down the house to return the actual beam. Now, on the face of it, the beam has a different name now because we said now it's part of a ceiling, and yet Midar Daisa, he would have had to return it, implying that Shinui Hashem is not enough to be koneh. And so Rabbi Yosef had given an answer. The reason is because there's no Shinui Hashem. Even when it's built into the ceiling, it's still called a beam. So now the Gemara continues. Rabbi Zera Omar, Rabbi Zera gives a different answer. The difference is Shinui Achozel Lebri Yosei, when it comes to a shinui which is reversible, as far as the change of name, where Reb Zera is saying there's not a change to the actual size or shape or whatever of the thing itself. The beam was built into the building as it is. The only thing you're arguing is that the name has changed, that now it became part of the roof. But this is shinui achozel lebriyosei. This is a reversible shinui, because if you do take down the roof and then you have then the beam will still be called a beam again. Its name hasn't been changed permanently. It's only been changed temporarily as long as this beam is part of the ceiling. So therefore, Abzeda says when it comes to a shinui hashem, that kind of thing where it's a change of name and where it's reversible, loy havi shinui, then that's not going to be considered a shinui as far as the gazlan acquiring it. So that is why Midar Daisa, in fact, he wouldn't own the beam and he would have to tear down the house and return the actual beam, and only Midrabanan are we saying he shouldn't have to in order to make takonas hashavim to make it easier for him to do tshuva. So in other words, when we had the case at the end of the previous Amud, when we had the case of a piece of leather that he turned into an itzva, so then it's never going to go back to being called just a plain piece of leather. It's now called an itzva or an Aramaic abarzin. It's never going to go back to be called called just a skin. As opposed to over here, where the beam is built into the roof, and then you take down the roof, and then eventually it goes back to being called a beam. So according to Rashi, it comes out that the fact is that if you had just thought about the itzba alone, not did a maisa, then that would be another example of what Reb Zera is saying over here. So maybe as long as it's together with yush, then it would be koina. Tosfos elsewhere discusses and says that and talks about that point that if you have a shinui hashem and you have yush, that might be enough to be koina. Okay. So the Gemara asks, "V'shini Hashem she'ina chozel b'yosef mi havi shinui." So you're telling me, according to Rabbi Yosef, what are you saying? Rabbi Yosef is saying the only reason why Midar Raisi you would have to return the beam is because it's because there's no shinui Hashem in the first place, because it's still called a beam even when it's built into the ceiling, as opposed to, according to Rabbi Zera, we said it is a shinui, but it's a reversible shinui. So it comes out, according to Rabbi Yosef, who disagrees with Rabbi Zera's answer, it comes out that according to Rabbi Yosef, even though it's a reversible shinui, if there was a shinui Hashem, then that would be enough to be koneh. And the only reason it doesn't buy the beam is because there's no shinui Hashem at all. The question is, Varitziner, consider the case of a pipe as far as the halachas of mikveh. The Me'ikra Ksitza, originally, before you build it into the ground, it's called a Ksitza. It's called just a branch, a piece of wood. V'hashta Tzinoda. Now, rather not before you put it in place, but before you make it, before you hollow out to make it into a pipe. You start out with a branch of a tree, which is just a piece of a tree, which is just called Ksitza. V'hashta Tzinoda. Now it gets a new name. It's called Tzinoda. A pipe. Vitanya, and we learn in a brisa, sinur shachakoko losoif kavoy. If you have a pipe that you first hollowed out, you first made it into a pipe, and then afterwards, which means that you made it into a keli, or losoif kavoy, and then afterwards you attached it to and then you attached it to the ground. So it's still considered a keli because it was a full keli. It was a full-fledged keli before you ever attached it to the ground. Therefore, posel as a mikveh. So therefore, it passels a mikveh. Now you have although some discussion about this. In particular, there's Rashbam and Tosfos in Bava Basra, where it also talks about this topic. Where they discuss, what do we mean that passels it? Do we mean if three logim of water pass through it, where we know that a mikveh of less than 40 saw is passeled by having three logim of drawn water brought into it? We have Mishnayos in Perek Yesh Malas a mikveh that discuss that point. So do we mean since this thing is a keli now, so therefore if three logim of water go through it into a mikveh which has less than 40 saw, then the mikveh is going to be possible? Or do we mean that only if the entire mikveh was piped in, only if all the water in the mikveh was piped in through that pipe, then it's going to be possible because now it's all mayim shorbi. Tosfos there in Bava Basra discusses a considerable point here that Gemara is going to mention briefly, and Tosfos discusses there in at some length what details of the water supply of a mikveh are daraisa, have to be done daraisa versus which ones are derabanan. We'll talk about it in a second. Anyway, the point is, so here you have, though, this thing was a keli to begin with, before you ever attach it to the ground, so therefore it passels the mikveh, either again with the three logim or with all the water going through it. But continues the braisa, if he did the other way around, first he attached it to the ground and then he hollowed it out, so it never was a keli before it was attached to the ground, so now it's considered part of the ground, so therefore it's not considered a keli, any posel as a mikveh, then it doesn't pass all the mikveh even if the water passes through it. Tosfos actually discusses over here also the point, what kind of pipe are we talking about? If it's just a regular straight pipe, it wouldn't necessarily pass or anything anyway, because how can that be considered shorim? The water is not drawn in it at all. So are we talking about Tosfos says where it has a rim around all four sides? are we talking about that maybe you have a wider area in it that you put in, that you carved out in it in order to keep, like this, when the water is flowing through it, the water has various sediments and particulates and whatever, suspended in it. So you want to have an area, a wider area in the pipe where those can settle out. So Tosfos discusses maybe it would be considered to be a keli because of those grounds. There are other possibilities that Rishonim bring up we're talking about. For example, it does have walls, but you have water flows through a hole at one end and then flows out the hole at the other end. So we're talking about it does have actual walls. We don't just mean that it's a straight pipe, but we mean that it actually has walls on the inlet and on the outlet, and then you have holes in there that the water goes through. There's a lot of discussion about that. I mean, as far as our mikvahs nowadays, obviously they have to get water into the mikvah somehow, but because of all these considerations, they have to use straight pipes. They use curved pipes. If they're pipes that have joints in them, that have L joints in them or whatever, then it becomes a real problem because based on what we're saying over here, those might make the water mind-shoving. The point is, the Gemara says, "V'am shinui Hashem milsehi." If you're telling me that shinui Hashem by itself is considered significant, according to Rabbi Yosef, then afilu kaver lo seif hakokay, namely posel. Then shouldn't the tzinner, shouldn't this pipe be posel, even if he first attached it to the ground and then carved it out? Because now he's still giving it a new name. Now it becomes the name tzinner. So therefore, so it should have the status of a separate kelim. Now why don't we consider it Shinri Maisa? So the David points out, because the fact is it is attached to the ground now, so therefore it's like digging a channel in the ground. But on the other hand, it has a new name now. It's called Sinner. So therefore, based on Rabbi Yosef's logic that Shinri Hashem is enough to be koina for the Gazlan, then Shinri Hashem should also be enough that now it's considered a keli and should pass over the mikveh equally well when it's attached to the ground before you ever made it into a keli. And the answer is shiny she'iva diminded abonim. The answer is it's different when it comes to the psul of drawn water, because that psul is only did abonim. Now again, here you have what do we mean as far as the Shemayim Shovim. Rashi says the point about three lugim, the fact that three lugim can pass a mikveh is only the fact that three lugim of drawn water can pass a mikveh is only dirabon. The Rashbam says similarly in the Gemara in Bava Basra. Tosfos over there discusses at some length and says maybe not necessarily, maybe even what the Gemara means is that the whole concept of Mayim Shuvim being possible for a mikveh in the first place is only Dirabanan. According to them, maybe Midaraisa, you would completely be able to make a mikveh out of Mayim Shuvim. According to them, for example, according to that way of looking at it, let's say a swimming pool would be a perfectly good mikveh. At least Daraisa, at least. Because it's all Mayim Shuvim. They discuss over there that maybe the concept that forty sa of Mayim Shuvim is possible for a mikveh is maybe only Dirabanan. Tosfos has a long discussion about it over there in Bava Basra. Interesting point to note in this connection. Both the Rebbe and Rabbi Moshe Feinstein dealt in various places with the question. You know, we have the Midrashim and things say that children who are born from Nidus tend to be chutz benyaks and have very bad Nidus and whatever. And, you know, the fact is we see in the last few decades when you have Balei Tshuva, you have many of them are very fine Jews, and many of them, their mothers on the face of it never went to the mikveh and never kept Karis and Mishkocha before they were conceived. How does that fit with those Midrashim? Both of them talk about the idea that there may have been times when the mother did go and bathe in water somehow in such a way that it could be considered a mikveh, at least on some level. I think the Rebbe talked about, for example, that women often go swimming in the ocean, and that's considered a mikveh, even though they're wearing a bathing suit. That's fine. It's not waterproof. And then I think one of the factors that's brought in over there is, in fact, this matter that maybe at least according to Tosfos, even a swimming pool or something like that would be at least on a Daraisa level would be considered a valid mikveh. So that kind of thing might be enough to take away what those Midrashim are saying about Bnei Nida. Anyway, the point is that the Gemara is saying over here, getting back to the Gemara, is that since the whole psul of shuvim, whether we mean the three logim or whether we mean the whole 40 sa, is only derabanan, then therefore we're able to be makel and we're able to say that in this case the fact that it has a new name of sinner when it got that name only after it was attached to the ground is not going to be enough to passel the mikveh. But that's different than that we can't necessarily generalize from that to what Rabbi Yosef is saying about shinui Hashem as far as a ganah. Well, the Gemara asks, "Yachi afilu derecha nami." Well, in that case, if you're going to say that you're being makel because the whole concept of shuvim of three logim of 40 saws, the case may be, is only derabanan afilu derecha nami, then the same thing should be true even in the pipe of the resha, even in the case where you created the pipe first, you hollowed it out first, or made the holes in it, or whatever you did to make it into something that will transmit water, and then you attached it. And yet the Braisa said that for that case, that it's possible. The difference is Hosim Ikatoras Kliolov Batolish, because the difference is there it has the name of a Kaili while detached from the ground, so therefore that name Kaili, that name of Tsinur, remains even after it's attached to the ground. Hocha in Toras Kliolov Batolish, whereas when it was attached to the ground and only then made into a Tsinur, then it never had the name of a Kaili while it was detached, therefore the Chachamim can be made with it, given that the whole concept of Mayim Shuvim, Pasul, and a Mikveh is only Dirabon. An interesting thing in this regard, by the way, is it used to always be, you find in Shas, it was a commonplace thing that mikvahs are always cold. You had, for example, a special thing they had to do for the Kohen Gadol's mikvah on Yom Kippur is that they would heat it up for him by putting in, for example, by putting in heated iron bars in order to warm up the water, since after all, the Kohen Gadol had to tovel five times on Yom Kippur. But other than that, it was always a given that mikvahs are cold. Eventually, the Alter Rebbe came up with a method of the problem was, how do you make a mikveh hot? The problem is that you would need some kind of keli in there. You'd need something to contain the water in order to be able to heat it up. And the problem is, of course, that you can't tovel in a keli. The Alter Rebbe came up with an invention where basically he created a type of box that can be immersed in a lake or something where the box is not considered a keli because it has holes that are large enough for it not to be considered a keli. Then you cement it to the bottom over there and you cement it to the bottom over there, and then that way it's like the Gemara is saying over here, it doesn't become a keli until after you because then the holes are closed up and it's considered a keli. But that only happens after it's cemented to the ground, and therefore you're able to fill it up with hot water. The water will go out the holes, of course, but enough of it will remain in there that it's possible to tovel in it. And eventually that became widely adopted, and it became an acceptable method of heating mikvahs. Nowadays, of course, since mikvahs are built that are purpose built in the first place, they have other ways of heating them that weren't available in the Alter Rebbe's times. But in fact, this is listed as one of the 10 zchusim of the Alter Rebbe, is that he created a method for mikvahs to be heated, and thereby made it that more women will be willing to do the mitzvah, and men for that matter, to do it for Tosfos Kedusha. Anyway, the reason I'm mentioning that is because that's another example of this kind of thing, of having something which is not a keli until it's attached to the ground, which is like what we're saying over here as far as the pipe. Okay. The Gemara says, Mesli, then. I have another contradiction against Rav Yosef. A Braisa says, Haganav v'hagazlan v'ha'anas, a ganav who steals things surreptitiously, as we said, who steals them in secret, v'hagazlan, or we said a gazlan is somebody who takes things openly, v'ha'anas, or an anas, which is the kind of, which is we've learned before, is also known as a chamsan, which we've learned before. He's somebody who will force somebody to sell him something, but he will pay, unlike a ganav or a gazlan who forces them, unlike a gazlan who forces them to give it and won't pay, an anas will at least pay. So all of them, Hekdesh and Hekdesh, if they declare the object that they stole, if they declare it Hekdesh, it is valid Hekdesh, or Trumasan Truma, and if they take Truma, then it's valid Truma, or Masroisan Meiser, and their Meiser is valid Meiser. So what do we see? Now, on the face of it, there was no Shinui Hashem, there's no Shinui Maiseh, there's no Shinui anything over here, and yet we're saying that their Hekdesh is valid Hekdesh and so forth. Now, by the way, Rashi makes the point, he says that it means v'osu lehonis, he says also to have hana, which would imply, in other words, that Rashi is saying, we're not going to say that the animal can actually be brought as a korban, because after all, you have mitzvah ba ba'aveira, which we'll talk about soon, the details of that in Tosfos. But at least that it is also b'hana, because now it's considered hekdesh. The point being, in other words, that how could the ganav be makdish it on the face of it? It's not his to be makdish. How must it be? It must be that he was koneh with yush, because there's no shini Hashem and no shinui anything over here. And yet we're saying hekdesh and hekdesh. So that shows, in other words, that it's enough, that yush all alone is enough, unlike Rabbi Yosef, who's been saying that yush by itself is not enough. You need yush plus some kind of shinui. So the answer is Amri. So they answer back, no. Hossam, Hossam ikas shini Hashem. The fact is there is a change in name as well. Dimi ikra tivla v'hashta truma. For example, in the case of truma, you have previously this fruit was called tevel. Now it gets a new name called truma. And the same thing, hektish, ni'ikra chulin, v'hashta hektish, in the same way, as far as hektish, before it was called chulin, now it's called hektish, so therefore, yes, that can be considered a different name. Now, Tosfos points out, we just said before about shinui achozo lebriyosa, we just said before about when you have a reversible shinui, that it's not necessarily a shinui. And here it's reversible in the sense that he could go to a rub to be Matur Neder on this truma that he designated, and it would go back to being tevel. Nevertheless, Tosfos says that's considered, that's a very uncommon kind of thing to do, and therefore we're not going to consider that to be a shinui achoz of the briyasa, even though technically it is. So there is some discussion about this, by the way. I mean, how exactly? I mean, we're saying that there's a name change from tevel to truma, but the fact is not all of it becomes truma. You don't give 100% of the payrus as truma. You only give a couple of percent of it. So how do you have now that there's a shinui hashem on the whole thing? And also for that matter, how was he able to declare it truma in the first place? How was he able to declare it truma in the first place if it's not his? So as far as how he's able to do it, actually, the Rashba says it's similar to the way we had in Gittin. We had the concept called Gitte V'yod, the Boin Ka'achas. You can have a case where a woman acquires a get and a chotzer at the same moment, the same way over here. You can say, That the moment he's makdish it, or the moment he's makdish it, or declares it truma or whatever, then he's also koine it at the same time. So the kinyan and the shinui come at the same time. But anyway, there are various things that Achronim talk about how exactly we're talking about, because on the face of it, how is he able to declare it truma or meiser before he actually ever acquired it. And how is there a shinui hashem on the whole thing? So there's the Rav Chaim Ozer talks about, and some other Achronim talk about, one possibility would be that the Gazlan actually used these payrus all as truma on behalf of his own, payrus. So therefore all of it becomes truma. And we're saying, therefore, therefore you have a shinui hashem on the whole thing. If you were just to take truma out of the thing itself, then it wouldn't work because the name of the shirayim doesn't change. Rav Shimon Shkof actually had said on that there is actually the rest of it goes from being called tevel to being called chulin, and Rav Chaim Ozer argues on that and says that no, it's only the change from tevel to truma is a shinui hashem, and not just from tevel to chulin. So we have to be talking about, so he says that he's taking the payrus that he stole, and he's using it as truma for his own truma. And again, shinui hashem works, and says therefore that that's good. And then there are different other achronim. There are different other achronim talk about it. The Or Sameach talks about a point. It could be that the other way around, the Ganav is separating truma. Or it doesn't have to be the other way around. We're talking about he is koneh the shinui hashem, and like the Rashba says, that comes together, and the part that becomes truma, he's giving it on behalf of the other fruit. He doesn't need das bialim for that. He doesn't necessarily need that the owner consents to that, because it's almost like zoch in the adam shalay b'fan. And then there's lots of questions on that. So there's a lot of lumders on this whole point over here of him being able to declare this produce truma. So here we're saying the same thing, or whatever it is, the same thing as far as hefdish. Now there's shinui hashem. Okay. Tosfos also points out, now you do have, by the way, you do have, there's a, Kodshim she'en chayav b'achruyosan. You have the kind of kodshim where if the animal dies or is lost or whatever, then he's not chayav to bring a different one. Then you have shinui reshus anyway. So here we're talking about where there is kodshim she'chayav b'achruyosan. So they're still considered in his reshus. Nevertheless, we can say it has a new name now because now it's called hektish. Okay. So the Gemara continues, Amar Rav Chista, Amar Rav Yonasan, Minayim l'shinui shehu koina. How do we know that a shinui is, that a shinui acquires the gneva on behalf of the gazlan? So we had before, actually, we had on some Achvav and Aleph, we had Rabba brought the posik v'heshev as a gzeva asher gozal. So now Rav Chista is going to bring that same posik, but he's going to darshan it a little bit differently. Shenema, the Hesher Vesagzela, the Pasuk said that you should return the stolen object. Now, the Hesher Vesagzela means that he has to return the stolen thing. So Matam Adlema Asher Gozal, what does it add when the Pasuk uses the word Asher Gozal, that he stole? What else, what are those two words adding? It means, Im Ke'en Sher Gozal Yachzir, it means if it's still in the same state that it was, it didn't have any shinui in it, compared to how he stole it, then Yachzir, then he has to return it as is, V'im Lav, and if not, Domin Ba'amal, Boi Shalomi, then he only has to pay the value. This is basically the same thing, actually, as Rabbah had said on Samach Vav Amar Aleph. So now Rav Chista is saying this as well, and the Gemara is going to get into some discussion about it. Actually, the Shittim Kobetzis brings that the discussion that the Gemara is going to have now, it could have just as well had on Rabbah's statement, but since to begin with, in the Beis Medrash, it was discussed in connection with Rav Chista's statement, then therefore the Gemara brings it over here. Anyway. The Gemara asks, "What do you mean? How can you learn from Asher Gozal that? How can you learn from Asher Gozal that it means that you pay only if it's still the identical item and not if there was any kind of shinui? Hi, Asher Gozal, mi boy, what would you gezel of him? We need that word Asher Gozal to teach us a different game. Suppose that a person's father had stolen something, and if the father had been alive." So what happens? The Torah tells us that you have various cases of asham gzelus, where a person denies a monetary claim against him and swears falsely to it. We've talked about before where that happens, for example, with that we talked about earlier in the perek, where it happens with pikadin, for example, where the owner of the pikadin comes to pick it up, and the shomer claims that it was stolen and swears falsely on that. We always say he has to pay keren v'chomesh and bring a korban asham. Here we have a similar case with Xelus. We call it in Ezra Makomen. We call that Oshem Hashem Xelus. It's not strictly speaking only for Xela. It's for any kind of case where a person has in his possession money or assets that belong to somebody else, and he's swearing falsely on it. So one of those cases would be a Shomer with a Pekadin. Another one would be a Ganav or a Gazlan. Anyway, the point is that. So if the Gazlan himself swears falsely that he didn't steal it, and later on he's ready to do tshuva, then he has to pay a keren v'choy mishvashem. But now, when we learn the words asher gozal, that he stole, is l'mo'oti gezel of it. That comes to exclude where it was stolen by his father. He would not have to add a choymesh for the gezel of his father. So his father had stolen and sworn falsely about it, and then the father died before he had the chance to pay. So the son is going to have to pay the keren, but he's not going to have to pay the choymesh. We're going to discuss these dinim in detail later in the Masechta. The point is, we're learning the word Asher Gozal. We're learning that from the word Asher Gozal. How can Rav Chista use the word Asher Gozal to teach us about if the Gezel is still in its original state versus not? The answer is, in Cain, if that was all the Pasuk wanted to teach us, Nichter Rahmana, Beheshev es Gzela Yashad Gozal, then it could have said, it didn't have to say Beheshev es Had Gzela, it could have said es Gzeloi, his Gezel. So Asher Gozal, it could have said Asher Les Gzeloi, his Gezel, and that would have been enough to understand that it means his Gezel rather than the one that his father stole. Asher Gozal, Lamaliva Michtav, why does it say Asher Gozal? Shmami Notarity, therefore we're able to learn both things. We're able to learn that it means that since it says Beheshev as Gzela rather than Gzeloi, then therefore we can learn both. It means that it's only when he himself stole it, Beheshev as Gzela, that we return the Gzela, only when it's still intact and when there was no shinri in it. And Asher Gozal, that this concept of paying a Choymish applies only when he himself stole it and not when his father stole it. And Maushal has a little bit of a different girsa that the Pasuk could have said. The Pasuk could have just said Beheshev es Hagzela. The Maushal has a slightly different girsa that the Pasuk could have said Beheshev es Hagzela, and instead it says Beheshev es Hagzela. And the fact that it says Asher Gozal. So in other words, we're learning both that it could have said Hagzela and it says Hagzela, and the fact that it says Asher Gozal. Okay. So that's one version. The Ikadam, the others say a different version of what Rav Chista said. According to the second version, Rav Chista is saying exactly the opposite. How do we know that a shinui is not koine? Because the pasuk says v'heishavas hagzela, implying no matter what state gzela is in, even if there's a shinui in it, then nevertheless it's not koine for him. Now, Tosfos earlier points out we did have the machlokas b'shama b'sfilo on the subject of shinui, and certainly Rav Chista is not going to disagree with b'sfilo. So Tosfos explained over there that there's a difference between shinui achozel lebriyosei and shinui she'ena achozel lebriyosei, where it's an irreversible change. For example, b'sfilo had talked over there about a case of wheat that was ground up into flour, where you're never making it back into wheat. Whereas Rav Chista is talking about a shinui achozel lebriyosei, a reversible shinui. Okay, so the Gemara says, "V'haksiv asher gozal." What do you mean? What about the words "asher gozal" in the pasuk? And the answer is, "Ahumi boilei agzele shaloi moisif chemish ve'in moisif chemish agzelavim." According to the second version, we're learning only from asher gozal that he doesn't pay a chemish for his father's gezel. Unlike in the first version, where we said we're learning from the fact that it could have said gzeloi, and it says gzela, and it says asher gozal. In the second version, we're not doubting like that. We're just saying we learn from asher gozal about his father's gzela versus his own. And therefore, according to this version, a shinui, or at least a reversible shinui, as Tosfos says, would not in fact be koine for him. There does end up being a machlokas rishonim about certain details of the shinui that were of what kind of shinui we're going to say over here that is koine for him. Later on, we're going to talk about something. That Rav Papa says on the subject at the end of the sugya, and we're going to say, in other words, that so the Rif and the Rosh bring that in fact a reversible shinui, a shinui achoz of the briyosei, is not considered a shinui. And the Rambam brings similar concepts that, for example, a person we talked about yesterday, a person stole pieces of wood and nailed them together to make a box, and that's not considered a shinui because all you have to do is take out the nails and it's still the same pieces of wood that it was before. And then there's machlokas. What about if there's a reversible shinui plus yirsh? Is that enough to require for him? Is that enough? So that there's a machlokas on, and Shulchan Aruch brings both opinions on the subject, and you have some discussion about that. Okay, continues the Gemara. Oma ula minayim liyirsh she'ena koina. How do we know, says Ullah, that Yush alone, when the owner gives up hope of ever getting the thing back, how do we know that by itself that's not koine? Shenema, because the pasuk says the Navi criticizes the Jewish people. This is the Navi Malachi at the beginning of the second Mesa Mekdash, is criticizing them for different things that they're doing wrong. And one of them is, he says, you're bringing unsuitable animals for korbanos. And he says, Shenema, ba'avesim gozul, you're bringing stolen animals. And you're bringing animals that are lame or that are sick, and you're bringing them as korbanos. So why is he mentioning together stolen as well as lame or sick? We learn from that gozel drumyot piseach. So Ula says, as far as korbanos, then it means that what's stolen is comparable to what's lame. When an animal is lame, there's no way of making it kosher again. That's a permanent worm. Af gozel, the less le takanta, therefore gozel also, there's no way of fixing it up, and it remains also as long as it's gozel. To be sure, Tosfos says, if there was an actual shinui in it, we had before, we stole a baby sheep, and eventually it grew into a ram, that would be different. But we're talking about as long as it remains in its original state, then Yish by itself, we're saying, and Ula says, we can derive from the pasuk, Loishna lifnei Yish, Loishna acha Yish. So it wouldn't matter before or after Yish, that either way it remains also as a korban. Now Tosfos has a long discussion over here that there seem to be other places where Ula himself says that Yirsh is koine. So first Tosfos starts discussing that maybe according to Rabbeinu Tam, Ula is only talking about the dinim of korbanos. It's specifically possible. We might say that Yush is Kona in other contexts, but as far as bringing it as a korban, Ula's going to say not on the grounds of mitzvah bar bavim. Then Tosfos goes on to discuss the Re, in turn, has a couple of questions on Rabbi Natan's explanation, and he ends up saying that actually no, what it is we are talking about that Yush, that it is true that according to Ula, Yush is not Kona at all, and he explains those various Gemaras that Tosfos brings in other ways. What it is, on the contrary, the Re says, if Yush was Kona, then we wouldn't call it a mitzvah bar b'aveira anymore. The Re learns that when do we call it a mitzvah bar b'aveira? Only when it's still not his at the time he wants to do the mitzvah with it. Once it becomes his, and if we were to say that Yush makes it his, then mitzvah bar b'aveira wouldn't apply anymore. He does say maybe it's different with brachas. We have at the beginning of the ninth perek of Ar Masechta, we're going to talk about a person stole wheat and made bread out of it. He's not allowed to make a bracha on it. It's called a Ritzeya Berech Niyetz Hashem. The robber, when he makes a bracha, is blaspheming Hashem. So the Re says maybe a bracha is different. Maybe a bracha to mention Shem Shemayim on it, you have to be more machmir. And then he gives other answers as well. But he goes on to discuss. And this whole point that maybe mitzvah bar b'aveira is only called that when he's, for example, we just said before the case where he's kona because he was makdish it, then we would say that's called a mitzvah bar b'aveira. But here, where there was yush first and he was kona and now he wants to be makdish it, the Re says maybe that would be possible. Maybe Ula is not talking about that case. So that's all one way of so that's how Ula learns that such an animal is possible for a korban. Rava Amamehacha, Rava says you have a different source for this concept that that Yush does not acquire the animal for him and he can't be makdish it as a korban. Because the pasuk says korban noi, we learned this before. The pasuk says his korban, meaning v'loy hagazel, and we learn from that a stolen korban is not accepted. Now, so before we discussed this on Samach Vav Amud Beis, and we talked about when exactly did the person steal it. If it was a before Yush, then of course there's no Chiddush that he can't bring it as a korban. We have to be talking about after Yush. So we had that discussion over there. And Rava had said that not necessarily it could mean that he stole an animal that was already designated as a korban. So here, Rava says, Rava is saying, Amos, when are we talking about? Elema lifnei Yush. Are we talking about that he wants to bring a korban before Yush? Of course, pshita, of course he can't. Lomali kura, you wouldn't need a posse to tell us it's not his. El alav la'achar Yush. Therefore, it must be talking about after Yush. Ushmamina Yush leikoni. And therefore, that shows that Yush is not Kona. So the Gemara says, Shemamina. Well, that proves it. That's a proof that Yush is not Kona. Again, maybe not across the board. Tosfos, that's what Rabbi Natan and the Re are discussing in Tosfos. Do we mean that Ula and Rava are talking across the board, or are they talking about only as far as the dinim of Korbanos? But the Gemara says, Rava hu de Omar, de Gaza Korban de Chavre. Didn't Rava himself, when we brought up this point, Korbanu v'loy hagazel, in the earlier sugya on Samach Vav Amud Beis, Rava himself was the one who said that, no, the Braisa is talking about a case, not where we said that we're talking about where he wants to be makdish at la'acha Yush, but rather that it was before Yush, and that he wants to bring the korban that he stole an animal that was already a korban. And was saying that he's not koneh with Yush, but when he's makdish it after the fact, maybe he is. So Rava seems to be contradicting himself. So the Gemara says, Yibosei Mahodavei, one possibility you could say is Rava changed his mind. First he said we were talking about where it was already declared hektish. Now he's saying that we're talking about that an animal that was holden when he stole it, and now he wants to make it, hektish. The other possibility is one of them was actually not Rava saying, but rather a papa. And the idea is how would such a mistake be made? How would something be attributed from a papa to Rava? Because Rava was a Talmud of Rava, and therefore, so he would say things stam, and people would assume that he got it from Rava. But in this case, it wouldn't be so. In this case, it would be something that a papa came up with independently or learned from one of his other rabbis. Tosfos also points out over here that necessarily we have to be, now they're apparently Tosfos had different gersois over here, whether this is Rava or Rabba talking in our piece over here. Tosfos says necessarily it has to be Rava, because in the earlier piece it was definitely Rava. We were using Rava was inferring what Rabba says, so there necessarily it has to be Rava. And since the Gemara is pointing out that on the face of it he's contradicting himself, then that means that here also it has to be Rava and not Rapa. Rava, and not Rabba. And again, that would explain how the mistake could come about that people thought that Rapapa's statement is actually Rava's, because Rapapa would say things in the name of his Rebbe, Rava, and he would say things that he learned, and people would assume that he learned them from his Rebbe, Rava, which is not necessarily always the case. Okay. Fine. So now we've reached the end of the discussions of all the ins and outs of we were talking about Tashlumei Kefil, and then we were talking about the whole concept. We were talking the last couple of blocks about the whole matter of when exactly the Ganav acquires the thing itself and then only has to pay its value, as far as Yirush and Shinui Maisa and Shinui Hashem and all of that. So now we've gone through all of that. So to summarize, the last thing we said was Yirush by itself is not enough to be Koine. Tosfos again discusses, does that mean across the board or only for Korbanos? Shinui Maisa is enough to be Koine. Shinui Hashem, we said it depends. Shinui Maisa and Shinui Hashem, one thing we said it depends whether they're reversible, whether they're reversible. Can this Maisa be easily undone? For example, boards that are made into a box. Or with Shinui Hashem, for example, according to Abzera, we have, let's say, a beam that was built into a building where all you have to do is take down the building and the beam resumes its name of a beam before, that I had before. When you have any of those things with Yirush, then those can be Koine. Yirush plus Shinui Maisa or plus Shinui Hashem, then those can be Koine. And then the Ganav has to pay only the value of it, and that would be relevant to at the whole bit at the beginning. A couple of days ago, we talked about then in that case, after a permanent shinui in it, for example, an animal that grew up and now became a ram or now became a full grown ox, if now he were to shecht it, then we would say that he wouldn't pay the shlomi dalad behei, because now it's considered his own animal that he's shechted. Okay. So now let's start talking about Tashlumei Arba v'Chamisha. The Mishnah had said, Umidas Tashlumei Arba v'Chamisha v'Chola, we said that the Mishnah had started by saying that Tashlumei Kefil apply across the board and for anything, as we worked out in the first couple of dafim of our perek, whereas Tashlumei Arba v'Chamisha apply only to sheep and cattle respectively. So the Gemara says, why? Vamai Nelach Shor Mishabbos. Why are we saying that it's limited only to those? Why don't we say that we should learn by Gzeira Shavan the word Shor from Shabbos? The same way as we learned at the end of the fifth parak, we talked about that there are dinim where the Torah says, for example, as far as an animal falling into a burr or an animal causing damage or whatever, where the Torah uses the word Shor, and we learn by Gzeira Shavan from Shabbos that it applies not only to a Shor but to any other kind of animal. Why don't we do the same thing over here? And say that even though the Torah mentions only the 4 or 5 penalty when it comes to a shur, when it comes to an ox or a sheep, maybe in fact it applies across the board to anything else. And we should say malahalim chayev oif kayotzvan. At least we should say, just like by Shabbos, the issue of having your animal do malacha on Shabbos is not only on oxen. Not only on oxen and donkeys that it says in the pasuk over there, but also chayav oif kayotzvahan. Every kind of wild animal and every kind of bird is in the same category. Afkan chayav oif kayotzvahan. The same thing over here. All wild animals and all birds should be included as well. And you should say that the 4 or 5 payment should apply to them as well. So now the Pnei Yeshua points out, after all, the Torah does say that you have 4 times for one and 5 times for the other. Well, then which one would you apply if you were to say it applied to all other animals? Then which one would you apply? Which one would you apply to them? The 4 or the 5? So like this, later on in the parak, that later on in the Perek, the Gemara points out a couple of reasons why indeed, why does the Torah make a lesser penalty for stealing a sheep than for stealing a, than for stealing an ox? And the Gemara brings two reasons over there. One, because an ox is used for work, and two, because an ox, because a sheep, you have to can there, and therefore, in other words, you cause a greater, therefore, the ganav caused a greater loss to the owner, a loss of work. And the second reason is because with a sheep, the owner, the ganav has the embarrassment of carrying it on his shoulder, whereas cattle walk by themselves. So the Pnei Yeshua says, if we were to say in our Gemara over here that we were to apply a tashlumi dalad vehei to other kinds of animals as well, then yeah, we would look for each one. We would say, for example, a donkey is used for work, and he doesn't carry it, therefore it would be fivefold. If, let's say, for example, he stole, if he stole one of those small dogs or whatever, then maybe he would pay only fourfold for those, because you don't use those for work, and because he has to carry them, etc. So that's what the Gemara is asking, is why don't we say that he should have to pay four or five times for any kind of animal? And the answer is, Amar Rava, Amar Krosh, Shur Vaseh, Shnei Pamin. Because the pasuk says the word shur vaseh twice. It says if a person steals shur oiseh and he shechts and he sells it, so he pays five times for the shur and four times for the seh. So it repeats the word shur and repeats the word seh twice. Shur vaseh ein midyachrin aloi. Therefore, we learn from that this din applies only to shur vaseh and not to any other animal. So Gemara says, Amri, well, we have to analyze that a little bit. Hey miyamter. So you're telling me, in effect, Rava, that there's an extra time that it says shur vaseh in the pasuk, and you're saying, therefore, you can learn from that this concept that it's limited to only them. And Tosfos, by the way, points out, by Shabbos, it doesn't mention seh, so therefore, why does it have to say seh twice over here? You wouldn't think to learn a Zeder Shava on seh from Shabbos, because there's nothing by Shabbos that says the word seh. And fine, Tosfos says if it didn't say seh twice, then you would think that sure means that nothing else. You pay five, but there are other things that you pay four. So it has to say seh to tell us that, no, seh is the only one that you pay four for. Anyway, the point is that, getting back to the Gemara, so Amri, hey miyater, which mention of shur vaseh, the first one or the second one, are you saying as extra that we can learn this from? Ilema shur vaseh the sefer miyater, are you going to tell me that the ones at the end of the pasuk are extra? The nichtav rachmana, because the pasuk could have written ki yignav shur vaseh utvachoy and mechoroy chamisha boker yishalom tachtav va'abatzayin tachtav. You're going to say the pasuk didn't need to repeat the word shur vaseh. It could have said he pays five instead of it, or four instead of it, without using the word shur or the word seh. The problem is you can't. E kosher rachmana hachi. If Hashem had written like that in the Torah, have amin of boi shalom etisha l'cholachav rachav. Maybe it means chamisha boker yishalom tachtav va'arba. It means that when a person stole any one of them, he has to pay nine animals for each one. Maybe the Torah is telling us that if a person steals an ox, he has to pay back five oxen plus four sheep. So you wouldn't know that it's five for one versus four for the other. Now you would answer back, no problem, because it says tachtav separately for each one, and therefore that shows that one goes on the shur and the other one goes on the seh. The problem is that still doesn't work. Chab tachtav miyater, you can say, because one tachtav fine is extra, because ahumi boiler the drosha achrita, because you only have one tachtav that would be extra, because the other tachtav we actually need for a different drosha, the tanya, yochol ganav shur shavah mana. You would think, since the Torah is saying that he has to pay back five oxen if he stole an ox, so you would think if he stole an ox that's worth a mana, an enormous amount of money, yeshalom tachtav negidin, then it's enough if he pays back in place of it negidin, which means animals that are only that are fainting, animals that are weak and practically on the verge of death. Rashi explains the word, you have the word vayigva in several places in Pesukim where it talks about tzaddikim, the vayigva, like they expired and they passed away, and Targum Onkelos translates it ve'is negid. So therefore negidin would be animals that are practically on the verge of death. So you would think that would be enough. So, Talmud Lema, tachtav, no, therefore the pasuk says tachtav twice, tachas aser and tachas asher and tachas aser. So in order to tell us that you have to give, if you're going to pay whatever it is you're going to pay with animals or with other, or with animals or with money, you have to pay the full value of the animal, not just weak animals. So therefore, so now we have those, so we need the word tachtav. So fine. So now, if the pasuk had said, so therefore, so you have, so the tachdovs are, so the word tachas, tachas asher, and tachas aser are needed for both of them, are needed to teach us this din, to teach us, and okay, Rashi says you could say one tachdov is used for another drosha, and the other one maybe would actually mean that you still have to pay nine for each one. So the point is, the Gemara is saying, so how do we know still, so you can't say that the sher of aser at the end of the pasuk are extra. You have to say the word sure and the word se at the end of the posit, otherwise you're going to misunderstand. Either you're not going to know this din about Megidim, or you're going to think that it means that if a person stole an ox, he has to pay back five oxen plus four sheep. So the Gemara says, Ela Shurva said the Resha Miyater. So rather we can answer that no, it's the ones at the beginning of the posit that are extra. The miyuter are extra. The nicht of Rachmana, ki yignev ishut, vachoy mechore, chamisha boker yishalom tachas asher, v'abatzen tachas aser. The pasuk could have said like this: if a person steals, and he shechts it, or he sells it. Now, so far, we don't know what the it is, but the pasuk continues that he has to pay five oxen instead of the ox, and five oxen, instead of the ox, and four sheep instead of the set. So therefore, so instead, since the Torah mentioned shur and set at the beginning of the pasuk, then therefore we can use what Rava was saying to say that that's teaching us that this din is limited only to shur and set. But the Gemara says no, that doesn't work. Because the Rachmana Hachi, if Hashem had written like that in the Torah, have Amina, I'd be going to betray the Tavach Lahu. Maybe you would misunderstand that it means that only if he shechted or stole two animals, because after all, you would say, Chamisha Boker Yishalom Tachzat Shur, Va'arbat Son Tachzat Seh, you would say that it means because he stole and shechted an ox and a sheep, therefore he's chayev for both of them. How would you know that it applies only to one? The Gemara says, no problem, because the Pasuk says he shechts it, lachan. Still, the Gemara says, Ve'ema ad begonu tavayu mazdim lahu, fine. Maybe that it means he's chayev only if he sells both, if he steals two animals and sells both of them. And the answer is the same thing. It says he sold it, which means only one. So therefore, so fine. So you would understand. So far, the Gemara is saying, in other words, so you could have understood from the word utvachoy or mechoroy that we're talking about one animal. And then when the end of the pasuk says that you have to pay tachas asher or tachas aser, you would understand that it still means only for one animal. And therefore, you have a sher v'aser extra in the pasuk at the beginning of the pasuk, which tells us that the din is limited only to sher v'aser. Still, the Gemara says ve'ema have amina. Still, you could argue that maybe if Pasuk phrased it that way, you would say ad begonav tauti, only if you stole both of them, b'tovach chad or mazbin chad, and he shechted one and he sold the other one. So you would say, sure, it says v'tvachoy or mechoroy, that he shechted an animal and he sold an animal. So maybe it means to begin with, he stole two animals, one of them he shechted, one of them he stole, one of them he sold, and that's when the Pasuk is saying that he has to pay five oxen or four sheep. So how would you know that not? Doesn't have to say sure and say in order to forestall that possibility. The answer is oy machore ksiv. I'm going back over here on the lines. So the answer is oy machore ksiv, because the pasuk doesn't say that he sold it. It said or he sold it. So that makes it clear that's one or the other. Not that he shechted one and sold the other, but that he shechted or he sold. Still, the Gemara says va'akati hava amina ad gonu tavayu. Still, you could still argue that it means that he stole both of them. V'tovach chad or mashayach chad. He shechted one and left over the other and didn't do anything with it. Or mazdin chad or mashayach chad. Or he sold one and left the other one for himself. Still, if the pasuk like this, when the pasuk tells us at the beginning of the pasuk, ki yignev ishtar oiseh, then it's clear that it means that he stole one or the other. But if you're telling me the pasuk didn't have to write the word shor oiseh, it could have said kinyugnav ish without specifying, then we would say maybe the din applies only if he steals two animals. One of them he shechted and the other one he did not. Or one of them he sold and the other one he did not, because it does say utvacha imachare. That would be when he's paying chamisha bakar or aratzai. How would we know that, that applies even when he stole only one animal in the first place? So the Gemara says, Ella, shor de sefer, the sederation miyater. Rather, the answer is like this. First, we tried to say that the shor and the se at the end of the pasuk are extra. We said that's no good because we do, in fact, need to learn from that, if we didn't have the words shor and se at the end of the pasuk, we would think that you have to pay nine animals or that you can pay weak animals. The ones in the ratio we said you can't either say are extra because we're saying after all you need to understand that we're talking about he stole only one animal. But what we're talking about over here, sure to safer, the seder ratio miyata. The answer is when it says sure the second time in the pasuk and when it says said the first time in the pasuk, those are the ones that are extra. And because the pasuk could have written like this, ki yignav ish shor, a person steals an ox, or tvachoy umacharei, and he shechts it, or he sells it, chamisha bakar yishalom tachtav, then he should pay five oxen instead of it. So it would say shor one time in the pasuk, and the second time it would say instead of it, va'arba tzon tachas aser, and then it would add or four sheep in place of a sheep. And we understand, therefore, that the Torah is now telling us that the same thing applies to to a sheep. And Tosfos adds, of course, a svara would be obviously then the word chamisha bakar yishalom tachtav would necessarily refer to the shur that it mentioned earlier in the pasuk. So it could have phrased it that way. Shur the safe of a seder eshalamali. Instead, it repeats the word shur yishalom tachas ashur, and it said seh at the beginning of the pasuk, where we said it wasn't necessary because it could have just mentioned seh at the end of the pasuk, and we would have understood that it applies to that. Shiva shmamina shur v'seh ein midyachrin aloi. Therefore, ultimately, we can learn that it means that this concept of four or five times applies only to a shur and only to a seh and nothing else. So that is how we learn that this tashlumi above chamisha applies only to oxen and to sheep and nothing else. Okay. And we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem. We'll talk about more of these dinim of tashlumi kefil and tashlumi above chamisha.
Ashkeach.